Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, I got a question for you, Tommy.
I hope I got an answer for you, Mike.
How long do you think this episode's going to go? What's your over-under?
Over-under? 45 minutes.
45 minutes?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to take the over. You know why?
Why?
Because you're long-winded.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, it really depends on how much stuff you have. I always have about the same amount of stuff. It just depends on how much you have.
Well, this episode, we're going to talk about...
I mean, I don't have much stuff.
That's not fair. You can hedge your own bet by doing...
I'm going to shave points.
I bet it's under 3 minutes.
Yep, 3 minutes?
All right, and that's going to do it for this episode.
Wait a minute. We didn't have legal briefs. I don't know nothing. Give me my briefs.
Well, this episode is going to be about legalized gambling.
All right.
Hence the over-under about how long this episode's going to last.
I see. So you were just setting me up for your intro, huh?
That's what we call a segue in the biz.
I thought that was one of those things you ride around on, stand it up, and hope you don't fall over.
Yeah, kind of. Those are those two. I don't know why they're called segues. Maybe because they get you from one place to another, I guess. I don't know.
I think because you segue from standing up to planting on your face.
Have you seen the off-road Segways? They have like the real big tires, and you take them on trails and stuff.
No, I would not want to attempt that.
Yeah, it seems a bit more dangerous,
I would say.
But you can bet on just about anything these days. People bet on actually even how long the national anthem will be at the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Whether it be heads or tails on the coin flip of the Super Bowl, things like that. So
I wouldn't bet on the weather.
That's a classic line right there. But did you know that gambling is actually a constitutional right?
No, I did not know it was a constitutional right. You mean in the...
Yeah.
In the Constitution, they said you can come here and worship how you feel and say what you want, and also you can gamble.
Yep. It's an amendment to the Constitution.
Hmm.
Do you think it's over or under Amendment 6.5?
It's over it.
There's another over under.
Yeah.
It's written, it says, there shall be no law which will affect the placing of bets on sports, both college and professional, but specifically excluding the placing of bets on high school because that's just creepy.
When the hell was that amendment offered? Because there were no pro sports when our forefathers got here.
It's actually not in the Constitution, but I thought that would be a good amendment. You know,
I mean, the only sports were how many British people you could shoot to try to get them to go back on their boats and take their tea.
But why is it that you can bet on college and professional sports and that nobody thinks that seems weird, but betting on high school sports would be weird?
Well, I think because they're not as supervised to the degree that college and professional sports are.
Now, I'm not advocating for betting on high school sports. I'm just saying that in my mind, it seems really weird and you shouldn't do it. It just seems wrong.
And I don't think the amendment says because it's just creepy.
Well, it's not. Yeah, it's not actually an amendment. I made that up.
Oh.
Did you think that was real?
Yeah, but I knew. That's what I said. When did that go in there? Because that was too modern a language. Just no. Otherwise, it would have been, henceforth, the boys playing in the field, playing quoits, shall be able to be betted upon.
They played Quidditch back then.
Quidditch? No, that's that Harry Potter thing. Where you chase the gold thing around and run into walls and stuff.
Well, there actually was...
There was quoits.
Quoits?
Quoits?
What's quoits?
It's some kind of game, kind of like horseshoes or what's the other thing I'm trying to think of where you throw the beanbag through the things? Cornhole.
Oh.
It's kind of like that kind of game, I think. But the Marshall, they have a quoits tournament every year to commemorate something or another. They all wear kilts and do it or something.
It was John Marshall's one of his favorite games or something.
Yeah, something like that.
The way the story goes.
Yeah, I don't really know how you play. You throw something at something and you get a point or two. That's about all I know of it.
Sounds reasonable.
Look it up. Quoits. Q-U-O-I-T-S, I believe.
It's the plural of coitus.
No, no, yeah. It's not. It's not the plural of it. That doesn't mean there's more than one doing that. That's coitai.
Coitai. There's gambling that's been
coitai
going on.
Coitai interrupti.
No, you don't want that. There's been gambling that's been going on all throughout history. And one of the more interesting things I thought of was
marriage.
That is a gamble.
Isn't that the biggest gamble that's been going on since the beginning of man?
It is a gamble. I'm twice a loser.
Well, that's all right. Third time's a charm. That's what they say.
That's right. I had to go ahead and make that joke before you did because I knew it was coming.
I can't make those kind of jokes anymore. Stephanie listens, I think, and so she doesn't like those kind of jokes.
Well, let me give you a little news flash. It makes me a little uncomfortable, too.
Oh, really?
You know. Just throwing it out there for the whole world to listen to on this podcast. It's just airing my dirty laundry.
If only the whole world listened to this podcast.
Well, I didn't say the whole world listened. I said it's out there for the whole world to listen to.
Oh, well, so I guess in outer space, in too. Theory, these things probably beam up into the stratosphere, huh?
Yeah, I guess that's how that works. Maybe that's how the internet works. I'm not really certain there. So one of the original kind of gambling that took place in our country was called the numbers game. Have you ever heard of that?
The numbers game. It's always a numbers game.
It also goes by the name numbers racket. I read it was called the Italian lottery or the daily number. And basically what it was kind of essentially an illegal form of lottery that was generally played in poor and working class neighborhoods in the U.S. And what would happen is that basically the bettor would try to pick a three-digit number that would match a number that was quote-unquote randomly drawn the next day. And that was kind of one of those things that took place, especially in poor or working class neighborhoods.
So it was kind of a ungoverned type thing. I mean, like some guy could just start one and spread word of mouth, and so people then would buy chances or whatever?
Yeah, pretty much. Essentially, they'd place a bet with a bookie, and that person would generally, just like the movies, would be at a tavern, a bar, a barbershop, or some sort of social club. And they would basically be an illegal betting parlor. And you would have runners that would carry the money back and forth and betting slips and things like that. And it's also called a policy racket or a policy game. And the name policy basically comes from the term that they're betting on the future, like a insurance policy.
Uh-huh.
So, and these kind of shops, they operated in the U.S. prior to 1860. And there's some reports from 1875 in New York that the lowest, the meanest, the worst form that gambling takes in New York City is that what is known as policy playing.
Mm.
And supposedly it flourished, like we said, in the poorer communities and different kind of segregated type communities, because it was only like each little neighborhood had their own kind of little numbers game racket going on. It wasn't like a citywide thing. It was basically in each little individual neighborhood. And,
sure.
And it was often run by some people with less than dubious traits. Might be the word I was looking for.
Well, you think so?
Yeah. I mean, they're basically taking people's money and giving
they
it out.
They had dubious character.
That's right. There was also reports of it in 1885 in Chicago and 1868, 1892 in Louisiana. It was different than kind of state lotteries because bookies could extend credit to people too. So essentially, you'd have these poor people kind of...
I can't pay.
Yeah, and they'd get behind.
All right, I give you till next Wednesday. Then I got to break your leg.
Got to warn you, the juice is running, though. I just like saying that. And there would be different kinds of games, too. So some of these games would say, like, the larger numbers, they'd pay off better if you hit it. So if it was only, like, you know, 600... 1 through 600, then basically those might pay better odds. But if it was, you know, larger numbers, then it would pay better.
Which is
very similar to kind of the lottery that we have today.
Yeah.
And actually, these numbers games that I was just talking about, they're illegal now. They were illegal then too, but they're
No wonder the government stepped in and took it over, and
exactly.
So they could make the money. And as long as they're making money, they're happy. If you're making money and they're not, they don't like that.
I thought that was one of the most interesting things is that they basically took these numbers games that a lot of people thought were really bad and said, well, you know what? We should do that ourselves.
Yeah. There's money to be made.
There is money to be made. Now, a lot of times what these lotteries do here now is that they use them to fund education and other kinds of important
right.
social programs. And, you know, supposedly it's kind of a fun way for the state to make money. It doesn't hurt anybody. But there are a lot of reports that you hear about people when it gets like to be a big number, people that really can't afford it will go out and spend a lot of money trying to win that.
And the odds are so astronomical, you're just not really helping yourself much.
Yeah. One of the interesting things I was kind of telling you about is that a lot of people didn't really like how they would draw the random number. They felt it was kind of fixed. And so they would do different things. Like they would have like a wheel they would spin where it would land on a different number. Sometimes they'd use like a bingo type thing where they'd roll the ball out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the more interesting things is that they picked something that was essentially known to all bettors, but was completely random. And so what they would do is they would say like the three place number would be based upon some numbers from the show bets at a local racetrack. So what they would say is, for example, if the racetrack winnings was $1,004 win, $583 place, and $27 to show, they would say the last numbers were the last number used. So it would be like 437 would be the number. And it would be just a random number that would be in something like that you'd see at a racetrack, and everybody know that was the number.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you know if you won or not. So that was kind of pretty interesting.
So they were basically devising getting their random number generated by the random act of the race.
Yeah, so a random act of another gambling thing,
yeah.
Which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, but I just always thought that was super interesting. They took something that was really looked down on socially and turned it around and made it a government thing, and then basically try to use it to fund what we think as good government programs.
Well, that's probably because you face the backlash of the evils of gambling, that this is a sin, but we're doing good things with the money. How can you say it's a sin when people are benefiting from this, you know?
Yeah.
So they try to offset it with that. Actually in the Bible, there's nothing that says you can't gamble. It does say that you should not lust after money,
mm-hmm.
and you should not scheme to make quick money or something along those lines. But there's nothing in it that says thou shalt not gamble.
What about setting up a booth at the temple to sell my wares? What does it say about that?
Your underwears?
No.
Oh, your overwears.
My overwears.
Okay, well, if you're going to sell your overwears, that's just fine. You can set up a booth at the temple.
Oh, we could turn this into a biblical scholar podcast.
Well, I just stumbled across that when I was doing my research.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Somebody asked that question.
It was on a pro gambling website. No, that's a common misconception. The Bible says gambling is good.
God said, let it ride. Double down.
God said, let it ride.
That's what God said. Let it ride. He came to me in a dream and he said, let it ride.
And on the seventh day, he took a 3-game parlay in the NFL and it was good.
That was my second introduction to gambling.
What's that?
Parlay cards.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about that. What are the parlay cards?
That was when I was like, still in college. And guys from the fraternity house would come in with these parlay cards, and they were like an index card, like a rectangular shaped card, and it had all the games from the NFL.
And they were like, now let me see if I remember these correctly, because I had seen them too, but not necessarily from you, I don't think.
Uh-huh.
And they were about maybe 7 inches tall and about 3 or 4 inches wide, and they were kind of manila colored.
Well, the ones I usually saw were white.
Okay.
And it had all the games there with the point spread. So you had to know how to read the point spread so you knew what you were betting on.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it also had a few of the games. I don't know how they decided which ones, but certain games were listed down there with an over-under number.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go through and pick however many you wanted. You could pick all of them, which if you hit every one of them, you won. I don't know. It had the odds on there, and had what you won for picking so many.
Right.
But you could pick as few as three, put your dollar on it, and if you won $5.
Yeah.
Well, I've always been a cheap bastard, so I don't like to lose money. So $1 and three of them to win five, okay, I'd do that. I think I won like the second time I played, and so I was hooked after that.
Yeah.
So I kept playing it, but it was always just the $1, and I'd pick the three surest bets I could find. I don't think I ever hit again after that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny. See, I think I had seen these too, and I can't remember where, but I remember, maybe it was from you, but I remember from my childhood seeing these parlay cards. And for some reason, I was thinking that they were turned in at the this bar that I think it's out of business now. It's called The Scoreboard. It was in downtown Huntington. I think that's where it was run out of for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Well, that could be. I don't know. I never knew where the money went to or where it came from. I just, there was a guy that went around and collected it. And, you know, if you won, he'd find you and give you your money.
I don't think that was probably legal, huh?
Probably not. I'm sure that it wasn't. but, you know, what are they going to do? $1 and $5? People running it, they might get them, but the people participating, I don't think it was worth their time.
You know, it's funny now that, and we're going to talk about this later, that sports gambling is actually legal in a lot of places now. It's up to the states. But I gamble. I have a little app on my phone, and since we're in West Virginia, we have sports gambling. I do the same thing, and I bet parlays, but I pick, you know, three games or something like that, and I only bet $1 too, because I guess I'm a cheap bastard too.
That's what
it is. But I like it because it kind of makes the game more interesting. It gives me, like, otherwise a game I wouldn't care about. I have some reason to root for somebody because otherwise I wouldn't really care.
You're right. Yeah, I followed it. I would sweat out those games every Sunday, watching them to see what the score was going to be.
I don't care if it's worth $1 or $5.
That's right. You just want to win, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because we were having lunch last Saturday, and I bet a parlay on three college football games, and one of them ended up let me down, but I was sweating it out at the table.
I don't bet college games. Those are too unpredictable. I go for the pro games.
Yeah.
I think those are more, I think that you can foresee those better.
Well, speaking of illegal gambling, I wanted to bring up illegal card games too, because that's something you always see in popular fiction and movies and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever see the movie Rounders?
I remember that name, but I can't remember what it was about.
Well, let me give you a little bit of a synopsis. It's a great movie. It's got John Malkovich, Matt Damon, Ed Norton, John Turturro, and Martin Landau.
What a group.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So essentially, this movie came out, I think, in 97, 98, something like that, about the time I was going to law school.
Yeah.
And Matt Damon was a law student who was a former underground gambler, and he goes back in the underworld to help out a friend and kind of get his money back. And it was, like I said, it was a really popular movie among my law school friends and myself, especially on poker night.
Yeah.
There's some really quotable lines in there. Like, for example, John Malkovich plays this Russian gambler, and he always eats Oreos, and he's like, check, check, check. He has this real thick accent. Uh-huh. He really soaks that role up. We'd always say that whenever people were checking and things like that. And eventually, he let out everybody's dreams as he dropped out of law school and went to Las Vegas to play in the World Series of Poker, and that's how the movie ends. Oh. So we were all kind of like, yeah, this is a great movie.
Well, it's funny, his sidekick, Ben Affleck, he actually got banned from some casinos in Vegas from playing blackjack.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
They said he was counting cards and that he was playing too well.
Is counting cards illegal?
Yes. And so, there's ways they can determine how you're doing it. And if you're really good, you know how to cover that you're counting. Mm-hmm. If you've just learned how to count, you're so busy counting, you don't know how to cover it. And apparently he had just learned how to count because they said one of the tricks is you use your chips to help you keep track of certain things.
Oh,
and he was actually using his chips to keep track of it. And they also look at how you're betting, that when certain cards show up, you bet low, and then when other cards show up, you start betting higher, so they can tell by the way you're betting if you're counting cards or not.
You know, I was in Las Vegas one time, and I was playing blackjack, and what I would do a lot of times is when I'm playing blackjack, if I start winning money, I would take some of my chips off the table and put it in my pocket, because that way I learned, okay, well, I don't want to bet that money.
Right.
I want to keep this money safe. And I wonder if that's one of the things too, is that if you take chips off the table and you put them in your pockets and you count them that way as well. Because one of the pit bosses came up to me and he kind of yelled at me for doing that.
Really?
And I explained to him what I was doing. He just kind of looked at me and, you know.
Yeah, they got people that watch those kind of things and they know what to look for that. And it's not illegal. It is not illegal to count cards. So you will not be guilty of a crime. The casinos don't like it.
Yeah, they just have a policy against it.
Yeah, because they want to be winning. They want to be taking your money. They don't want you taking theirs.
They want to build more casinos.
Right. So if they feel that you are counting cards, they will ask you to leave. Hmm. And I don't think you have the ability to say, no, I'll keep playing. I'm pretty sure that if they decide you're done, you're done.
There's two ways you can get out of here, the front door and the back door.
Yeah, the front door is a much gentler ride. But we used to play cards. We had a group that would play, and we'd meet, and we had some of us were in college, and some of the guys were still in high school, and the ones that were in high school mostly worked over at Frost Top. Mm-hmm. So when they got off, they'd clear out the bin of all the leftover hot dogs and French fries and hamburgers, and they'd bring that with it. Well, in return, we'd have all the beer sitting there.
Yeah.
So when they showed up, we'd have beer and hot dogs and hamburgers and everything while we were playing poker. But it was all, you know, nickel ante and then quarter bets and stuff like that. You know, it was change. It wasn't dollars.
Yeah.
If you won $10 in a pool, you were like rich. You thought you, you know, really did it.
Yeah. It's the whole thing. I think it's just, it's kind of fun, especially if it's low stakes like that and just gives you something to do. It's kind of a fun thing.
Yeah.
And it depends if you get serious about it too. I mean, it doesn't really matter if it's a dollar or a penny. Like you're just, you don't want to lose.
If you're a competitive person. I'm just not a gambler. I can't, I know that I'll lose. I'm not good in games of chance.
Yeah.
I don't have luck in those regards. I might have luck in other things, but not in games of chance. Well, now, I might as well just go flush my money down the toilet.
I remember, you know, anytime we'd go to an amusement park, you'd come home with all kinds of stuffed animals.
That was a game of skill. Throwing the football through the thing or shooting baskets or something like that. That wasn't luck. It wasn't somebody just matching a number or anything.
But those baskets, those rims are smaller.
That's all right. You just have to be better. So that was all right. But games, I mean, I would never do. The only thing I ever did is just more or less for the fun of watching it. I would get like $20 in tokens or coins or quarters or whatever it took and play the slot machines when I was in Vegas.
Yeah.
And I knew I'm going to go spend this 20 in the slot machine and walk away.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to win anything, but I'd go do it just because the thrill of doing it, that something could happen.
The biggest win I ever had gambling, I've been to Vegas a couple times. It was my buddy Rich's bachelor party. We went out there and I think it was the day before we left or something like that, and we decided we were going to learn how to play craps. Never played craps before. So we went down to a craps table, and there was a pit boss there, and we explained to him, hey, we never played craps before. And
sound like people are throwing poop around.
And it's the dice game.
Yeah.
And we have snake eyes. You know, baby needs a new pair of shoes.
Oh, you try to roll sevens or something like that.
Sevens, elevens. The pit boss, he was really nice to us, and he actually showed us how to bet and whatnot and where to place bets and things like that. And we actually, we got on a bit of a heater, and yeah. I think each one of us won. And we started out just betting small, but I think each one of us ended up winning probably $500-$600. And I think one friend even won like $1,500.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was serious. We were like, wow, this is a great game. We want to play this game all the time. It's so easy. And then I've played it a couple times since then and never done that well ever again. But I don't know what was going on that day, but we were in the zone.
Well, I'll tell you what my biggest win in Vegas ever was.
What's that?
Mary had dropped something on the floor of our hotel, mm-hmm. and I was down looking on the floor, and as I looked under the dresser in the room, I saw what looked like a chip, and I reached up under there, and I slid it out, and sure enough, it was a poker chip.
Oh.
And I didn't know what it was worth or anything like that, because I didn't play any games that took poker chips. So I thought, I wonder if this is real. So I went down to the cashier's where I waited till nobody was there, because I didn't want anybody to see the cheap bastard with the one chip. Asking questions. I walked up to the window and I handed it to the girl. I said, is this a real chip? Yes. I said, what's it worth? And she said, $100. I said, can I have it? She said, you mean you want to cash it? And I said, yeah, can I do that? She said, sure. She handed me $100. I went to Mary. I said, it's the biggest win I ever had in Vegas right there at $100.
That's pretty awesome. I know, knowing my personality though, I probably would have gone and put it like on black or red or something like that.
I didn't. I figured I was ahead and I was quitting.
I don't have a super gambling personality, but I think for found money like that, I said, God told me to let it ride.
I figured I must need it. God said, let it ride right in my wallet, right into my pocket.
Well, there's been some recent legal changes in the status of sports betting, which we want to talk about. Which we kind of alluded to earlier. But before that, I think we have a pending motion before the court.
Why, yes, if it please your...
I guess technically it's not pending yet. Would you like to make a motion so it will be pending?
I would like to make a motion there, your betship. Can I approach the bench to pay court costs?
You betcha.
Well, good. We have a brand new sponsor today, and it is our good friends at Native.
At Native, they create safe, simple, effective products that people use in the bathroom every day. They create products with trusted ingredients and trusted performance. Not convinced? Then check out the 8,000 five-star reviews from their customers.
Now, their products are formulated without aluminum, parabens, or talc. They're filled with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, shea butter, which is a moisturizer and emollient, and tapioca starch, which absorbs wetness.
They never test on animals, and there's free shipping and returns.
And the best part is, it works.
It does. I can attest to it.
That's right. We've each gotten our own sample and have been able to try it, and mine was vanilla and coconut, and I smell like a vanilla coconut dream now.
And that is the most popular scent. I went for lavender and rose because that's just me.
Well, I can see that. It's kind of like arsenic and old lace.
Which is currently not a
scent. Or a flavor.
They're looking into it.
It works. Making the switch to an aluminum-free deodorant does not mean having to sacrifice on product performance.
And did we mention there's over 8,000 five-star reviews?
I think you did.
People love it. You can check Native out on the Today Show, Elle Magazine, Pop Sugar, Refinery 29, and a few more.
Now, the ingredients are things you know. Less is more with Native. We have fewer, simpler ingredients, so you know everything that's in your deodorant.
And there's no risk to try. There's free returns and exchanges in the USA.
The classic deodorant scents include coconut and vanilla, as I mentioned, lavender and rose, as Mike mentioned, and there's also cucumber and mint and eucalyptus and mint.
And I gotta tell you, I love the smell of mine. Lavender and rose is all me.
Well, you're a flowery guy.
I am. And right now, for 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code CORT during checkout.
That's nativedeodorant.com and use promo code CORT during checkout.
You'll thank us, and more importantly, so will your friends.
That's right. So take care of your pits the proper way.
Now, previously, sports gambling was essentially illegal in the United States.
Absolutely.
There were a few exceptions to it.
Vegas.
So basically, it was Delaware, Montana, Nevada, and Oregon. And they had pre-existing sports lotteries and sport betting frameworks, and they were kind of grandfathered in, so you could actually bet there. But for the rest of the United States, we were not allowed to do it.
No, and it was illegal.
Where did it start being illegal?
When did it start being illegal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my research said that it started being illegal in 1961 with the Wire Act.
So what was that about?
Well, Robert F. Kennedy was interested in keeping organized crime out of professional sports and collegiate sports.
That's a good thing, probably.
So he petitioned the Congress to pass a bill that would outlaw it. And it was signed into law by his brother, John F. Kennedy, in 1961. It's called the Wire Act.
Sounds like an inside job.
Yeah, and it was basically said that you couldn't use any telephones. That's what the wire was all about. You couldn't use any telephones to place or receive or talk about betting or anything like that. Anything to do with illegal betting.
I thought the wire was all about drug dealing and the police force in inner city Baltimore.
Well, that came along later.
Okay. Which is a great show, by the way.
Yeah, I never watched it, but I heard of it.
Oh, do yourself a favor. Check it out.
Well, I might. I got to get Orange is the New Black first. I've been told I have to watch that one.
I stopped watching it.
Oh.
I watched four seasons.
Oh.
Kind of got lost interest.
I hadn't watched any. But anyway, that's what the main purpose of it was, is you had organized crime that was involved in the betting process, and they were influencing, shall we say, some of the participants in the sports.
There was also some more legislation called the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992, also called PASPA. And basically that
PASPA
that allowed some states to maintain their legal sports betting, like we said, Delaware, Montana, Nevada, and Oregon. But basically it said that everyone else, you weren't allowed to do it. It was only in those certain places.
Hmm.
And so what this boils down to, again, as we've talked about before, is states' rights versus federal rights.
Exactly.
Who's in charge here?
Right.
And there's a lot of polls done during this time period since 1992 through today, where basically they were trying to figure out, how did Americans really feel about sports betting?
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, at first, you would think that most Americans were against it, which they kind of were. But then there seemed to be a little bit of a trend where it showed that people really didn't care about it too much. So, you know, it started changing a little bit.
Kind of like marijuana usage.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's kind of interesting you mentioned that, because the ramifications from this might have some ramifications on marijuana as well, or maybe some arguments for it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, in 2012, despite different federal law preventions, the state legislature of New Jersey and Governor Chris Christie signed a law that would allow sports betting to take place in New Jersey at racetracks and Atlantic City casinos. So they were probably saying, why do people have to go all the way to these other states to do it? Why is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
We should be allowed to do it too. So they passed a law saying that they were going to do it. And voters were asked during a poll whether New Jersey should allow sports betting even if federal law prevents it from doing so, or wait to allow sports betting until federal law permits it. Results showed that nearly half of the voters wanted to allow sports betting, while 38% wanted to wait and see what Congress would do and wait till basically federal law allowed it. So essentially, you already see there, it's already shifting where most people say, no, we should go ahead and be able to do it. We, as a state, we should be able to allow ourselves to do it.
So Governor Christie was throwing his weight around, huh?
And basically in June, and I guess I say basically a lot, somebody said that.
I never had mentioned it to you, but.
Well, essentially, in June 2017, the Supreme Court of the United States announced that it would hear New Jersey's case, which by that time had changed to Murphy v. National Collegiate Athletic Association in the fall of 2017, which basically contradicted the...
Now I'm going to hear it every time you say it.
I did say it, didn't I? Which contradicted the position of the U.S. Acting Solicitor General Jeffrey Wall, who said that he did not want the case heard at that time. So basically the U.S. said, no, we don't want to hear it. Did I say it again?
Yep. You sure did. Roll the tape back.
Murphy v. National Collegiate Athletic Association was heard in 2018, and essentially the arguments boiled down to the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which is kind of interesting if you think about this. This turns into a constitutional argument. The issue was whether the U.S. federal government has the right to control state lawmaking, not mm-hmm. just gambling, but basically state lawmaking.
Right.
Because you got to think about this. This is something that goes outside of just the purview of gambling. It goes to states' rights versus federal rights, like I said.
Well, and I'm sure that the federal government used the Commerce Clause to do that, because the betting is crossing state lines. It may be within your state, but it's on things that are going on in other parts of the country.
They did, in part, but they also, the Commerce Clause is actually part of the 10th Amendment as well,
mm-hmm.
but they did also rely on the Supremacy Clause as well. So New Jersey sought to have that PASPA law overturned, which would allow sports betting. What the pro-betting side characterized this as was basically commandeering. It's a term that has been used in federal law with regard to the federal government overstepping their bounds.
Right.
And the anti-betting side said the Supremacy Clause of the United States should allow PASPA to stay in force. So what happened was that on May 14th, 2018, the court reversed the lower court findings favoring New Jersey and deciding that PASPA violated the anti-commandeering principle by a 7-2 vote. So pretty clear cut.
Yeah.
And declared the entire law unconstitutional by a 6-3 vote. And there were a lot of different states that had joined in this argument, and West Virginia was actually one of them.
Yeah, we were one of the first ones when the new law to be right there, one of the first eight.
That's right.
Usually we're behind the curve.
So the 10th Amendment, what it says, and this is where you kind of have to look at when you're looking at this analysis, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. That's the 10th Amendment.
So you could put it to a vote to the people. Do you want to allow it?
Exactly. And the 10th Amendment is similar to some earlier provisions that were in the Articles of Confederation, which predated the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this goes towards principles of Confederation versus a strong central government.
Right. Now, one of the arguments that you could make was, you know, it's like they talked about with marijuana, that you have basically an illegal market that's going on. You have criminals that are selling marijuana. So if you legalize it, then you don't have criminals doing it because the government's selling it or whoever. You know, you're licensing it and selling it. So it takes it out of the hands of criminals or organized crime. And so it actually does better. Now, I don't know if you could make that argument, though, for sports betting, that it's happening anyway. Mm-hmm. But by legalizing it, you're putting it in the proper hands of people that are handling it, and you're taking it out of organized crime so that they don't benefit from it.
Well, let me ask you a question. Was there anything we discussed on this episode previously at the very beginning that was kind of reminiscent of that?
That was kind of reminiscent of that?
The numbers game.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they did. They took something that was basically illegal and turned it around and made it government.
Right.
So why wouldn't it work for sports gambling?
Well, because it's a little bit different. The lottery is so well regulated and within, you know, it's so confined and everything that I don't think that there's anything funny going on with that unless it's people embezzling that are, you know, involved in the money part of it.
Well, I definitely see a parallel.
But here's where I think, though, that it goes off the rails is you have individuals that can be contacted that can influence how games go, whether they're professional or collegiate. And these individuals may have either they've just get threatened, they just get picked because they're real good and they can influence a game. They can have they're that good that they can influence how a game ends. Or maybe these guys had been gambling or doing something, and so they use that as blackmail. You either do this or everybody's going to know, or we'll wipe out your gambling debts if you throw this game or whatever, you know?
Well, there is the human factor. Now, I will concede that is a valid point.
That's where I see it falls apart.
But then again, I mean, couldn't it be done by the numbers game as well, by the lottery?
No. The lottery, you see the numbers being picked. And all that's certified, and they have people that are paid for the security of that. I mean, it would have to be a real enterprise for that to go. It can't be one guy that's sitting in the room drawing the three numbers in the back room in the little township where they run their own game. Well, that fixes the number.
I'll tell you what. I'll certify the Patriots are going to cover this weekend. I don't know, man. But I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, there's definitely an argument to be made that sports betting is similar to the numbers game.
See, I mean, you could fix a horse race, I guess, by having your jockey throw it. He couldn't win it, but he could lose it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how you do it. You're not going to influence the horse. I mean, unless you go over and give it something that gives it the trots or something so it's not running too good.
Well, and again, I mentioned that this is something that could be used with regard, this case could be used with regard to marijuana legalization. You can obviously see where that would go.
Yeah, but I can see where that brings something out of the darkness and into the light and actually cleans the situation up. I'm not so sure if sports betting does the same thing. You still have the opportunity for people to get together and influence a game and have money influence a game for people to stand to win out of it.
There's some other cases where the Supreme Court's invalidated different laws for violating the commandeering clause. I just want to touch on a couple of those real quick. And it's a pretty controversial area of law. Some of the justices really don't like it. they think it's some sort of legal fiction. The one case was New York v. United States in 1992, and the Supreme Court invalidated a portion of a federal law that violated the 10th Amendment under the Commandeering Clause, and it involved low-level radioactive waste policy amendments act of 1985. And the act provided three incentives for states to comply with statutory obligations to provide for the disposal of low-level radioactive waste. And the first two incentives were monetary. The third, which was eventually challenged, obliged states to take title to any waste within their borders that was not disposed of prior to January 1st, 1996, and made each state liable for all damages related to the waste. The court ruled that the imposition of that obligation violates the 10th Amendment. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor wrote the federal government can encourage states to adopt certain regulations through the spending power by attaching different conditions if you want to receive federal funds like the highway tax dollars and things like that, or through the commerce power by directly preempting state law. However, Congress cannot directly compel states to enforce federal regulations. So that's kind of the difference there. This didn't really fall into the Commerce Clause, although they in theory could have the power to do that under the Commerce Clause. Mm-hmm. They didn't try to do that. They were basically trying to enforce them federal regulations, not necessarily right. some sort of law. Another case was Prince v. United States, and the court ruled that part of the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act had violated the 10th Amendment as well. That act required state and local law enforcement officials to conduct background checks on people attempting to purchase handguns. Justice Antonin Scalia, writing for the majority, basically used the United States versus New York to show that the act violated the 10th Amendment, since the act forced participation of the state's executive in the actual administration of a federal program, and it was unconstitutional. So you're basically making the state do something that the federal government is mandating.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a couple examples of how the commandeering clause has been, or that commandeering principle has been used to overthrow things based on the 10th Amendment. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I think it makes sports more interesting for me because I bet $1.
Well, it does. I'm just saying that, if it was going on, it was going on anyway.
Yeah.
But you still have this thing. Well, I've got the five most famous sports betting conspiracies and controversies.
Uh-oh.
And they all come back to organized crime being involved. At least that's the theory.
Yeah.
Organized crime being involved somehow. The first one was the Chicago Black Sox.
Say It Ain't So.
Yeah. In 1919. And
have you ever watched that movie, 8 Men Out?
Yes.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. It makes you feel bad for them.
Yeah, it does.
So these guys received the 8 of the players of the Chicago White Sox that were in the World Series with the Cincinnati Reds. They were paid $10,000 each basically to throw the series so that the organized crime people behind it could win all the money by betting on Cincinnati.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things that they one or two of them kind of confessed to it, then took it back. But there was a lot of things that kind of were kind of contradictory. And one of the reasons that they went along with it wasn't really the money. It was because Charles Comiskey was the owner of them, and he was such a penny pincher and ran. I mean, that part of the reason they call them the Black Sox is because they wouldn't even properly launder their uniforms.
Yeah.
So the uniforms are so dingy and dirty. That's why they called them that.
That's why they wouldn't wear shoes.
That was just the one guy. But Comiskey was the owner, and he was so tight with his team that they basically did it as a way to rebel against him. It was a stick it to the man type thing.
Yeah.
But they all got banned from baseball for life when it came to be. But that didn't matter. The World Series was already decided.
It was.
Then you had a referee in the NBA from 1994 to 2007 named Tim Donaghy.
Yeah.
And he's a disgraced NBA as perhaps the most notorious figure in modern sports betting history. And he would influence games along with point shaving and things like that. He could do it by calling more fouls and calling turnovers and things like that to help a team win or decrease or increase the point spread. If they need some more points, call some fouls, get them on the foul line, let them shoot some baskets.
Keep it close, Keep it close.
Yeah. Well, they said that he was caught up in something where he owed a whole bunch of money for betting, and so this was his way of paying it back.
Yeah.
Then you had Ali versus Liston, the second round, the second time they fought. The match between Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston, who was the former heavyweight champion, is one of the most legendary controversies possible, although it's hard to decipher its exact motivation. Having captured the heavyweight title from Liston in 64, Ali got back into the ring with him in Lewiston, Maine. And then, since then, boxing fans have debated the so-called phantom punch that Ali delivered to Liston, and Ali shouted at him, "Get up and fight, sucker," because he just felt he took a dive.
Yeah.
And a lot of them felt like that was so that Liston was paying off bets that he owed because he had been known to be a hard drinker and a partier and stuff like that. And they said that he had also been involved in gambling. So he took a dive in the second round so that people could bet. You know, one of the things you bet is who will win and what round will
yeah,
they win it in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they nailed it on that one.
Down to the second.
Yeah. Now, I never heard this theory before. The Battle of the Sexes. Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that.
Said that, of course, he had won Wimbledon at one point. This was after he was a top player, but he had won Wimbledon. And the match was designed to test out whether a top female competitor could hold court with a male counterpart. And the winner was set to receive $100,000. Now, earlier in 1973, Riggs had challenged Margaret Court, the number one female tennis player in the world at the time, to a game of tennis, and had wiped the floor with her 6-1, 6-2 in victories in less than an hour. Then, when he played Billie Jean King, she won. Now, she was not the number one player at the time. Now, she was well known,
yeah,
but she was a little bit beyond the peak of her prime. And she beat him 6-4, 6-3, 6-3. And a lot of people say that he got in with some people and rigged it because everybody would have picked on him. Bobby Riggs rigged it. And so he threw
it. That's where the term comes from.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think it doesn't.
But I'd never heard that he threw that for the betting.
Yeah.
But supposedly there's a lot of controversy out there that happened. In the NHL, Operation Slapshot, there was actually an assistant coach for the Phoenix Coyotes, a guy named Rick Touche, T-O-C-C-H-E-T. I guess that's Touche or Tocket.
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 I think so.
But anyway, he ran a gambling operation on sports, but they didn't bet on hockey games.
We have a code of conduct here.
That's right. They didn't bet on hockey games. They bet on all the other sports, but he ran it. But it was commonly known among players and coaches and stuff in the NHL. And then they cracked down on him, and they kicked him out of hockey, but only for like a year. And later he became a head coach of another hockey team because they said, well, he never gambled on hockey.
Yeah.
So it was all right.
A little friendly betting. High school football.
Yeah. But so those are just some of the ones that took place, that people betting on it and people rigging games and some things like that, rigging the outcome of a fight. And those are the things that worry me when it comes to sports betting. I don't want it to influence games. I want the games to be played purely for whatever happens, not so that people can influence it to win some money at it.
Well, let me ask you a question. And this is, when we first started tackling this subject, this was the first thing I wanted to ask you because I wanted to hear your point of view because I don't think I know it. What do you think about Pete Rose?
Well, I think that he made a grave mistake when he was a manager for the Reds. He bet on baseball, including some of the Reds' games.
Yeah.
Now, at first, he said he never bet on his own team. He did bet on his team. The only thing he can stand by is he never bet against his team.
Yeah.
But he did bet. But I think that he's been out long enough. I think that he belongs in the Hall of Fame. He was one of the greatest, if not the greatest player to ever play in baseball. I don't even like baseball. But Pete Rose was a heck of a player.
You used to, didn't you?
Well, not really. I never was much of a baseball fan. I used to follow it some, but I wasn't much of a baseball fan. But I do remember this. I was standing out on the hump at Queensgate Yard, rail yard in Cincinnati, and the Riverfront Stadium was not very far from where that was. And I heard the cheer go up over at the stadium when he broke Ty Cobb's record with the hit.
Yeah. I remember I was sitting in my parents' house watching it on TV.
Yeah.
I was in the prime of my baseball watching. Now, I always thought you liked baseball though.
No, not really. I played it as a kid because everybody else did. What else were you gonna do in the summer? It was time to play baseball.
I remember you throwing ground balls to me and helped me learn how to field a ground ball properly, like over and over and over.
Sure.
Again.
That's just growing up stuff that you have to do as a boy. You have to learn how to catch a grounder.
It's just standard stuff.
Stay in front of it. Use your face to block it.
Yep.
Don't let it get by you. Use your body, it won't hurt but for a minute.
You gotta love that dirt.
That's right. Even if you're eating it coming off the ramp.
These are all lessons I learned the hard way. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms. So, Tommy.
Yes, Mike.
What is the theory that invalidated the 10th Amendment to allow sports gambling?
The Supremacy Clause or something like that.
That's what the people,
that's what the federal government exercised.
That's right. But the people that wanted gambling, what did they say?
That they had states' rights.
They did. It was under the commandeering.
Commandeering.
Yeah, so basically you're commandeering the state's rights by doing this.
So you wanted extraordinary deering instead of commandeering.
Sure. But that's all. It's all in the 10th Amendment, which also goes along with the Commerce Clause, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And the Commerce Clause, which you know what that is, right?
Yeah, Santa's brother.
Santa's brother.
He counts the money, keeps the books.
The Commerce Clause, which you mentioned, which we didn't really go into, but in case you're just picking this episode up and don't know what the Commerce Clause is, that is essentially the clause in the Constitution that allows the federal government to assert law over the states, because anything that affects interstate commerce, the federal government has the power to regulate.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't affect interstate commerce, the federal government can't really do much about it.
Right.
What was the name of the case that overturned... Let's make this a two-part question. What was the law which was passed in 1992 that made it illegal to gamble on sports except in certain places?
Pap smear.
Close. The Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992.
PASPA.
PASPA.
I knew it was something like that.
And bonus question, what is the name of the case which overturned it?
New York versus Miller or something like that.
No.
Oh.
Murphy versus National Collegiate Athletic Association.
Oh, well, I missed that one by a mile. That was the radioactive stuff. I think I got the New York one or something.
It's radioactive.
Yeah.
Do you know who started the attack on PASPA?
No.
Portly gentleman.
Chris Christie.
That's right.
He was throwing his weight around.
He was throwing his weight around. I was trying to help you, like,
hey, we're here in Jersey.
Connect the dots there.
We're here in Jersey, and you can't do that. And if you don't like it, I'm going to close the bridge.
Well, he did close the bridge, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs.
Well, I did mediocre.
Yeah, you know, par for the course.
Yeah, it's about right for me.
So
I'm an average guy.
Are we over or under the time limit?
Since you're the only one that can see it, I'm going to guess that we're under.
You're wrong.
Oh.
We're over.
Oh. Well,
time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, well, by the time we edit it down, it'll be all right.
Yeah, we got to edit out all the stupid stuff I said and the mistakes and all the basicallys.
Oh, well, then we're down to 5 minutes.
Basically, we're down to 5 minutes.
Basically.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thoughts. Today's random thought is gaslight. I don't understand what gaslight means. I don't understand how it's used or the reference or where it came from. When I first started hearing people talking about someone being gaslighted or that person gaslighted me, I asked someone, I said, can you use that in a sentence and tell me what it means? Well, they said, he gaslighted her. Okay, that's no help. Try another one. Don't gaslight me. Okay, I still don't follow. I don't understand what that means. Now, when I was a kid, I guess they still are, but I remember it more when I was a kid, there were people that had post lights outside that were gaslights, and you always knew they were gaslights because when the rest of the neighborhood was without power, the people with the gas lights, the power was on. So that's a good thing, I guess. It was just two little glowing orbs in there that were gas burning. But where did this come from? What does gaslight mean? I've had a couple people try to explain it to me, and it's kind of like net neutrality. I still don't know which side I'm on. I don't know what I'm rooting for or what's happening. And if someone tells me I gaslighted them, I won't know what to do to correct it because I don't know what I did. Now, if they said you had gas in front of me, I would know what that meant. But I don't understand the whole gaslight thing. And so far, no one has been able to explain it to where I have a definition. So in the meantime, I'll just have to hope I don't do it and nobody does it to me because I won't know what it is anyway. This has been Tommy's Random Thoughts.